Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Okay, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fucksters? What the fuckstables? What the fuckaholics? What the fuckadelics? It's Mark Maron. This is WTF. Welcome to the show. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. I want to thank people right up front for coming out to the Trip in the House at the Steve Allen Theater on Tuesday. We had a nice, exciting hour plus, maybe hour and a half jam session where I mixed it up a bit. It's interesting when I'm doing these shows. I'm at the Tripany House at the Steve Allen Theater September 30th, October 14th, October 21st, just to do these workout shows, doing some of the stuff that I was working on before at these shows and also seeing what else happens. But I feel the drive. I feel compelled to, when people have seen me before working out stuff, to find something else, put it on the line, push the envelope. The lovely and talented and horrendous Dave Anthony opened for me. So come out to those shows if you want. You can go to WTFpod.com, go to the calendar, and get the link. I don't know how many tickets are left. It's a small room. There's parking. It's a cheap ticket, and it's nice. And I'll hang out and say hi afterwards. Well, you know, I'm trying to get some work done. Big news, folks. I don't want to forget to tell you this. Maron on IFC got picked up for a third season. We're going to get into it. Got 13 more episodes to write, to shoot, to act in, to produce. Very exciting. I'm living my dream, and I'm thrilled to get the opportunity to do a third season of television, something I never thought I would do. And, you know, we've got a good groove going. I know the guys pulled in a couple of new writers. Jerry Stahl is going to be on staff this year. Dave Anthony's there. Michael Jammin, Sievert Glarum, Sean Russell, and myself are going to, we're going to start writing a television show. 13 episodes of it. I think I got some shit. I think it's going to be fine. And I want to thank IFC for the opportunity. We're excited to do it. And I'm glad I get to give you some more TV. All right. Yay me. All right. Let's go over some of these dates before I get into things. The LA Podcast Festival is on Saturday, September 27th. I'll be doing a live podcast there. I'll also be appearing on Aisha Tyler's podcast that weekend. That's at the Sofitel here in Los Angeles. You can go to WTFpod.com calendar and get the link for that. Litquake. I wanted to talk about that. I'll be in San Francisco, California, October 12th. I'll be at Litquake. It's Mark Maron in conversation with Jack Boulware, who's an old friend of mine. So that should be exciting. We got the New York Comedy Festival coming up November 7th. That's sold out. Comics Come Home at the Boston Garden November 8th. That's going to be an amazing show. This is a benefit for the Cam Neely Foundation. Bill Burr, Lenny Clark, Jimmy Fallon, Craig Ferguson, Jim Gaffigan, Mark Maron, more to be announced. Holy shit. That's a big lineup. That is on November 8th. We got things to do. We got Nick Stoller on the podcast today. And I got to be honest with you, I wasn't hard on him, but I did bust some balls. There's no doubt about that. Nick Stoller is a director, if you don't know. He directed Forgetting Sarah Marshall. He directed Get Him to the Greek. And speaking of that, he directed Neighbors. That comes out next week, actually, on Blu-ray, DVD, and digital HD on the 23rd. But we got an opportunity to chat. We had some common friends. But the bottom line was, in this conversation, is that he went to Harvard. Oh, he also did Muppets Most Wanted. He did The 5-Year Engagement. He's a comedy film director. Wanted to talk to him. Didn't know him that well. Nice guy. Went to Harvard. Problem with me. I don't really know if I examine it as closely as I should that I have a fundamental problem with people who go to Harvard. I don't judge them as people. How can you say that, Mark? You just said you have a problem with people that go to Harvard. All right. I guess in my mind, pow, look out. Just shit my pants. Just coffee.coop, available at WTFpod.com. Hey, Harvard University. Harvard. That was a place I didn't go. That was a place I could never get into. That was a place that was always in my mind. If you went to Harvard, automatically you were given the keys to the kingdom. Automatically you were taught the way to be a complete and full intellectual. Automatically you had cachet in the world. Automatically you got the best education anywhere and you were an amazing person. It turns out that one of those is bullshit. A lot of it definitely true to some degree. I mean, I talked to Conan O'Brien about it on this show, that there is some sort of fraternal order that is honored around the world in the halls of power that one is has access to if one goes to Harvard. But in my mind, it just stood out as this place that, you know, how could you be a real intellectual if you didn't go to Harvard? I had it on this pedestal that there was something about it. I was always a bright guy. I think I was a smart kid. I was one of those people that the teachers used to say, well, Mark's got a motivational problem. He's very smart, but he's not motivated. I guess that's what you call sleeping in class. I guess that's what you call ditching class. I don't remember anything I fucking learned in high school. I guess nobody really does, but I don't remember really being there. I remember a few teachers, freshman, sophomore, and junior year. I was like, I don't want to go to college. I don't fucking want to do it. I'm just going to hang out, man. I really didn't want to go to college, and I was almost failing out of high school. And then somehow or another, my senior year of college, or senior year of high school, I freaked out, panicked, and I was like, I got to get the fuck out of here. My parents got a few bucks. They'll pay to get me out of here. I should take that opportunity to get the hell out of here. And I scrambled and applied to a bunch of colleges, a bunch of community colleges, and didn't get in anywhere because my high school transcripts sucked. I don't even think I took the SATs. I got into Boston University's CBS program, the College of Basic Studies, which was, it didn't sound like a good idea to me. And eventually I got into Curry College in Milton, Massachusetts, which had one of the best programs for some learning disabilities, dyslexia, in the country. But they also were rather lenient to middle class people who could afford to send their high school fuck ups to a small liberal arts college outside of Boston. So I went there for a year and I decided I was going to be a doctor. And I just focused and I studied the shit out of everything. I remember spending like 12 hours in a library trying to fully understand photosynthesis. And I did it. I can understand it. I knew how it worked. I got straight A's almost my freshman year. Just pushed it. But I couldn't go to Harvard, man. It was too late. Too late. Then I went to BU, transferred to BU, BGU. And again, I don't know how the hell I got through college, but I do know that just across the way that Harvard, with their crew, with their preppies, with their well-bred folks, the whole legacy of college just used to hang over me. The legacy or the idea of Harvard was profound to me. I thought that people who went to Harvard must be better than me. Perhaps they are. I never could get the hang of how to contextualize anything educationally. I couldn't get the hang. I don't know that I could write a term paper for you right now. I don't know if I could write a paper on something. I could not figure out how to do basic shit. Everything is always happening in the immediate moment for me. It's very hard. It took me years to be able to put anything into any sort of structure or system or context. Everything I had to engage was viscerally and immediately. Like with writing a paper, I mean, I would spend hours writing papers. I got to write a 10-page paper, and I'd write 10 pages of opening paragraphs. I couldn't fucking make the point. I didn't understand. You got opening paragraph, then you make an outline. You support it, you support it, you support it. you know, all your different areas. Then you write a conclusion. I could not figure it out. The thought of it right now is giving me anxiety. Just to write a short-term paper would drive me fucking nuts because I know I couldn't do it. I wrote a book. It doesn't matter. I don't know if I could write a good paper. It was only up until a few years ago. I had an incomplete in an English class. For some reason, I focused on romantic literature for the year. That I had a focus, like I was an English major with a focus in romantic lit, and that was a 9 o'clock class, and I had drinking to do, so I didn't make it very often to that class. And when I did, I was not really together, and that was Yeats and Shelley and Byron and Keats, and I read the hell out of those things. Sometimes I read them the night before, but I read them, and I had my own interpretation of them. That was how I rolled. I will interpret this as if it's fresh for me, happening right now. I don't care when they wrote. I don't care who influenced them. I don't care where they fall in history or what they were up against. How do I feel about reading this right now? That's how I did it. That's how I studied. So, in other words, I graduated with honors in college, but it was only because I was full of fucking charm. You can charm yourself through an English degree. And I did a film studies minor, which was just actively and excitedly watching movies and learning about movies and just treating everything as if it's just happening for me. I was very good at writing very engaged readings of things. And that got me through. But still, there's something that hung over me, man. Fucking Harvard, man. Right across the way. If I had only gone there, perhaps I would have been able to contextualize things. Perhaps I would have understood structure. Perhaps I would have been able to write a good term paper. Perhaps I would have automatically become an intellectual of sorts. But I did go on to become sort of a pseudo-intellectual for a long time. And now I'm pretty diligent at not talking about anything I don't know about. And if I don't know about it, I'll say I don't know about it. But I do have opinions about things, and I still don't put them into context very often. I just react to them. I'm a reactor. That's what I am. Harvard, man. I couldn't have gotten in. There was nothing I could do. I wasn't focused. I don't even know. Like, there's part of me that I think I could go back to college now, maybe learn a few things. But I don't know if I really could. I don't know if I'm any better a student. I don't know if my brain has changed in those ways that would make it, you know, more palatable or more would absorb. I think I did learn, if I learned anything in school, not that you're asking me, but if I learned anything, it was to fully engage in all of my interests. That's what I did. I had the time. I acted. I wrote plays. I wrote for the paper. I wrote poems. Did some photography. Thought about stuff. Got very excited about a lot of different movies and art and things. That was the best I could do. I took the time to do it, and I had some guidance in doing it, but man, I could not fucking contextualize anything. My brain just had no compartmentalization. Everything's always happening for me right now. Right now. Right now. This is the first time I ever set eyes on this painting. Who cares about the history? How do I feel about it? That's the college I went to. How do you get grades at this school? Just tell us how you feel about something. Get excited about it one way or the other. And if you do a good job at getting excited about it and engaging with it, we'll give you a good grade. That's the way I approach college. But Nick Stoller went to Harvard. We're going to talk to him.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Now, are those fucking dogs gonna do that all the whole time?
Sorry, I brought all my dogs.
Yeah, what is with you Hollywood types?
I can't.
And your animals dogs. With their outfits.
I hate dogs in offices.
I'm not anti-dog, but I don't know. I don't connect anymore. I don't connect. Like, I don't feel the urge. If it's not a pug or a French bulldog, I'm not touching it.
No.
Don't need to. If it's just a filthy kind of like, what kind of dog is that? Kind of, you know, retriever setter-ish thing?
Yeah.
I don't care.
Like, I'll pet a dog, but it's not, I don't, I'm not, I don't connect with them.
Really?
It's like a fluffy pillow or something.
What do you,
are,
do you
have the same connection.
Are you bad with animals in general?
I know I'm not bad with them. I just don't really care about, I don't care.
What kind of fucking person are you,
Nick? I don't care.
What do you mean you don't care?
I like people. I care about people.
Do you?
Kind of.
Do you have pet people?
I have some slaves. I treat them really well, though.
So how's this Neighbors movie doing? Like, how many millions of dollars? The fucking dog. Shut up! Yeah, in the like the first weekend.
It made.
I can't believe that dog shut up.
It worked.
That's the best. Let's just take a minute to savor that. What an amazing moment that was.
That was incredible. You have a magic power.
Sorry. Sorry. I was rehearsing.
Oh, okay.
So what did it do? Like, I want to know what it feels like to just by proximity to say the amount of money you're going to save.
It was it was $49 million.
Holy shit.
It was crazy.
So you're sitting at home.
Yeah. I was on a party bus.
You were?
We went on a party bus.
For the opening night?
For the opening night.
You rented a party bus?
Yeah.
Who?
Universal, I think, rented us a party bus.
Whose idea was that?
It was, I think it was the Point Grey, Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg. They produced the movie, and I think it was there.
I've talked to them in here.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a good interview.
Yeah, they're good guys.
They're good.
Yeah.
They're good guys.
Nice Jewish guys from Canada.
Yeah. Exactly.
Canadian Jews.
Canadian comic Jews.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so you rent a bus because they want to, like, let's party, and what was the angle? What do you do on a bus? Was it just
you?
Full
douche.
Yeah.
That's the full douche. What do you think you do? You drive around. You check your, like, stats. You check the movie stats. You high five for, like, 6 hours.
Full douche.
It's the full douche. Like, what do you think?
Smoke some weed.
I didn't even do that. I just drank a few beers.
Yeah. So, okay, but, like, you knew it was going to do all right. But I guess you don't, do you?
This one seemed like it was going to do well. I haven't had this crazy an experience before. So, yeah.
But you've had stinkers, right?
I've done four movies. This is my fourth movie.
It's only your fourth movie?
It's only the fourth movie I've directed, yeah.
But you've been involved. Movies. We'll go back.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, so.
But I've had, of the three previous movies, the first one, Sarah Marshall, did well.
Great movie.
Oh, thank you.
I like that movie. I watch it, and I like Jason Segel. Yeah. There's some real heart in that movie.
Oh, thanks.
Yes.
Thank you. Get Him to the Greek was the second movie.
That did very well.
I
enjoyed that movie. That was fun.
No, thanks.
Not as much depth as Sarah Marshall, but good.
No, it's a different kind of movie.
All right. Well, as long as we understand each other.
And then the third one, Five Year Engagement, it didn't do as well.
No, why?
It didn't. You know, I think it didn't do as well because it wasn't a wish fulfillment idea.
Explain that.
People didn't want to be in a 5-year engagement.
It's
too long. Yeah, it wasn't something that you wanted to be a part
of. Women aren't going to be like, yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Women that sounds
like,
great.
Women aren't like, sign me up for that.
Yeah, so. For the 5-year engagement.
Exactly.
That's their biggest nightmare.
It's their biggest nightmare.
But you didn't think about that going in?
No, I didn't. No, you learn on each movie, so that's a new thing.
Did it break even?
I think at the end of the day it did, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a disaster.
Unmitigated disaster.
No, because it wasn't expensive.
Right.
Know? I wish it had done better.
But this movie, Zac Efron, not known for being hilarious.
But he's pretty funny. If you watch like his, you know, movies, you can see, like I watched, there's 17 again.
Yeah.
I'm sure I know you're a huge
fan. Oh, that's right. He was all right on that.
Yeah,
that was the one where he goes back and no, that was okay.
Yeah.
That was with Tom Lennon.
Yeah.
Plays his friend.
His friend who's in Star Wars.
And who plays the woman again? Was it Judd's wife?
Yeah, Leslie.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, she's funny in it.
She probably hates being referred to as Judd's wife. That's probably mistake numero uno.
Yeah.
One time I interviewed Larry David's wife, Lori.
Mm-hmm.
Lori David, when they were still married, and I referred to her as Cheryl. I was interviewing her on Air America.
What happened?
It was no good. it was not a good radio moment for the right reason.
What?
For the wrong reason, it was a great radio moment.
Did she start to yell at you or was it just the vibe change?
The tone definitely changed.
Yeah. Did you find yourself apologizing or did you just like think, I'm just going to go through it?
No, I can't shut up. I'm like, I can't believe I did that. It's really bad. Please forgive me publicly.
Yeah. Did she say so, it's okay?
She said that's never happened before.
Really?
With that tone, I believe.
How could that? That had to have happened all the time.
No, I mean, well, she's important in her own head about things.
I guess so.
You know, everybody doesn't want to be in the shadow of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They have their own thing. You don't want to be like, what's that guy's chick's name? The one who's does all the great stuff?
Yeah. No, that's the nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been there. Well, let's not talk about me. I'm happier here. So, Nick's,
you've been there? You've been in the shadow of your girlfriend?
No, they've been in the shadow of me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's not a tremendous shadow. Not publicly. I hear at home it's a pretty large shadow.
You have a very small wife.
But yeah, my public...
Who fits in your shadow. Yeah.
My public shadow, not huge.
Right.
A little bigger now.
Right.
But back in the day, no, it was a personal shadow.
Do you get... You must get recognized now, walking around.
I get recognized in weird ways for different things.
Okay.
Some people recognize me for the comedy. Some people now recognize me for the IFC show. But the greatest recognition... was one time I was on the phone at Phoenix Airport, mm-hmm. sitting in a chair, and there was a guy sitting facing the other way behind me, and I'm just talking, and he goes, "You're Marc Maron, because I just recognize your voice."
That's so awesome.
That's wild.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Or I get this thing where people have their earphones on, they'll look at me and go, "Listening to you right now." Right now. And I'm like, which episode?
Yeah. Is it all dudes?
No.
So it's not, is there a certain type that recognizes you, or is it, it's all different kinds?
Troubled people.
Troubled people.
No, it's all different people. I'm always very surprised by it. Yeah, there are a lot of dudes, but they're like, I don't know. I like to think there are women that enjoy the show, mm-hmm. that I don't annoy.
Yeah.
I think there are. There's some out there.
There's some women that see you, okay.
So, Nick, you're a big director. You're big time. People trust you with millions of dollars.
They do.
How much did this, Neighbors cost?
It cost 18.
That's not a lot.
No, it was cheap.
Give them to the Greek. That was cost some money, right?
That was my most expensive. That cost, I think, 45.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
And okay, let's go back.
Okay.
Because you're a smart guy. You seem to have your shit together.
I'm glad I seem that way.
It's
because I'm wearing a collared shirt.
But where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Miami.
In Miami, Florida?
I grew up in Miami, Florida.
And that's where you live your whole life?
Well, I was born in London.
Why?
My parents just lived there for 10 years.
They're not British?
Not British.
Your dad had some big idea.
They just moved there. They wanted to move. They moved there in 1970, and they left in 1980.
They wanted out?
They were just going there for an adventure.
You never said why? Did you go to London?
No, I said why. I said why.
And?
And they said they just wanted a little adventure, so they moved there.
Are they still together?
They're still together, yeah.
Oh, so you're one of those people.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that's where this is starting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not in front of the camera. Those people are in front of the camera.
The needy, insecure ones are in front of the camera.
I have my own shit I'm dealing with, but it's all behind the camera.
I'm making note of that. Yeah. His own shit. He's dealing with. We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
Star. Okay.
Before I came here, by the way, my wife said I have to listen to this podcast because then I'll get to know my husband.
Oh, really?
Because it's like there's a therapeutic angle
interviews. Are you in therapy?
I just started going.
Oh, so you're okay. Something's
just
going
started.
On.
Yeah.
How many times have you gone?
I've gone, I think, about 8 times, 9 times.
Oh, so you should know by now whether, you're jerking that guy around.
I don't think what do you mean by jerking him around?
Like, are you just kind of rambling on and entertaining him? Or are you like, these are the issues I'd like to deal with?
Oh, no. I had issues that I wanted to deal with.
Really?
So, yeah. Yeah. So yeah.
That's okay.
It was a specific reason. It wasn't just like I want to entertain a guy.
I'm gonna make another post-it.
Oh no.
Reason. So.
Oh God.
So no, we don't. You know, look, I don't pry.
Yeah.
But you grow up in Miami, Florida.
I grew up in Miami. Yeah.
Are you Jewish?
I'm Jewish.
Really?
I know. No one thinks I'm Jewish.
No, I figured Stoller. Stoller. Lieber and Stoller. They wrote
all
the songs.
Yeah, that's true. Lieber and Stoller.
Fred Stoller.
He's Jewish.
Yeah, he's very Jewish in a way. But, but just behaviorally. Behaviorally Jewish.
Yeah.
So what's your dad do in Miami? Why are you in Miami? Why'd you end up there? Because usually younger Jews don't necessarily go raise their kids in Miami. But that might be a judgment on my part, and I'm not sure that's true.
No, I think my dad grew up in Miami.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he wanted to go back home.
Really? So your grandparents were there?
All four. Were there.
You grew up with all four grandparents?
Yeah.
All and parents there. That stayed married?
Yes.
This is, I think we're done talking.
Okay. This was a delight.
What'd your dad do down there?
He was and is a stockbroker. Now they live in New York. All grandparents gone. They live in New York.
My
parents live in New York.
Sort of.
They did the reverse.
So they got old and went to New York.
Yeah. And my mom did not like Miami.
Oh,
so that was
why?
She didn't really find any friends there. She's from New York. I think she always wanted to.
Like Manhattan?
Manhattan, yeah. She's Upper West Side.
Oh.
Yeah, so she wanted to go back and.
So she probably hated every second of it. Why are we here now?
She hated it. Yeah. She hated it.
So that was in the house.
That was in the house.
Yeah. Yeah, just waking up to your mother going, why?
Yeah. It was a lot of that shit.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, yeah.
Like just miserable drinking during the day.
See, my dad has a Google alert with my name on it. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know how much to talk about this.
You can talk about all you want.
That's true. Yeah.
Talk about the horrible fighting that went on in your home when you were a child. Talk about how it scarred you and that you.
No, it resulted in me really enjoying comedy.
And you've got siblings?
Yeah, I have a brother.
Yeah? How'd he turn out?
He turned out, he works in politics.
Really?
Yeah, he works for Alan Grayson.
Uh-huh.
Who's a very liberal politician.
Familiar with that guy.
And he started out as a blogger, my brother. He was like the first person who said the word blog to me.
Oh, I thought you were going to say to anyone.
Maybe to anyone. He was talking about how blogs are going to take over everything. And
he and Al Gore invented the internet and the word blog.
Yes, he did. Exactly.
And I just I just made fun of Al Gore for something the right wing makes fun of him for, and I feel ashamed of it.
And it's not true.
It's not true.
He didn't even claim that he invented it.
No, it's all bullshit.
It's all bullshit.
They just hung that on him to make him look foolish.
Yeah. And it worked.
It did work.
Because he's kind of stiff.
Yeah, he's a little stiff and did not defend himself properly.
Right.
You got to fight, fight, fight.
Always fight.
Yeah. So you grow up in Miami. Like, were you a troubled kid?
No, I was goody two shoes.
Really?
Yeah, I was. I was looking for
approval?
Yeah, I
raising
think so.
Your hand a lot in school?
Yeah, I was that kind of guy.
Straight A's?
Yeah, I got good grades. Oof. Yeah.
Sports?
No sports.
Okay.
Terrible sports.
All right, we can keep moving forward.
Yeah, okay.
That was
close.
It was.
I felt like...
Touch and go.
Yeah.
So your brother...
Did you get good grades?
No.
Terrible grades or mediocre grades?
At one point, it was pretty bad.
Okay.
And then I freaked out my senior year, and I had to apply myself. I was the unmotivated kid. Like, he's very bright, but we don't know how to get him...
And then senior year, you got really good grades?
Well, I got panicky, because I wasn't going to go to college. Okay. I decided I was just going to ruin my life completely.
Okay.
And then, like, my senior year, I'm like, I got to get the fuck out of here.
Mm-hmm.
What am I going to do here? And it was, you know, and then I got, like...
Wait, where'd you grow up again?
Albuquerque.
All right, okay.
Family's from Jersey, though.
Oh, okay.
So I nailed it senior year, but it was not quite enough to get me into a decent school.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up in a, you know, a slightly smaller, sort of sympathetic college, I'll call it.
Okay. Nice. Sympathetic.
Big-hearted for people who had the money to put their troubled kids in that school.
I got you.
So, all right, so you kick ass in school. Was there any comedy in your life at that time?
Well, yeah. I mean, my grandfather, my dad's dad, always made lots of jokes, and my dad was obsessed with comedy, and I was obsessed. I became obsessed.
How?
He loves comedy. He loves Saturday Night Live. He loves...
Who are his guys, though?
The people he loved?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really was like the early Saturday Night Live stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and like Chevy Chase, like all of those, like, you know, those movies. I mean, as a kid, I would watch a lot of the, you know, the Zucker Abrams Zucker stuff, like Top Secret.
It's weird, because I didn't like that stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, I could identify it as being funny to people, but for me, not so much. Like, I don't really like, I mean, like...
You didn't like Naked Gun?
No, I like it, but it's, what you're more impressed with the amount of jokes.
Yeah.
Like, the tone of it is so... The pace of it is amazing, and it's really just this weird, big joke delivery system.
Yeah,
and some of them are pretty amazing.
Yeah,
like I enjoyed Airplane. You know, like that's the one I think back on. Naked Gun. Yeah, I enjoy it because Leslie Nielsen was funny. But it's, you know, I like deeper comedy.
I was a kid experiencing those things, so
I'm just saying you're shallow, and as a child, you were shallow.
Those are I'm a shallow person. That's the height of that's actually all I've ever seen in the comedy genre are Naked Gun. Naked Gun 2.5, Naked Gun 33 1/3, and that's it.
It seemed to be enough.
I saw part of Top Secret, but it got too deep.
No, of course it's fun as a kid, those movies.
And it was like what was on our VHS shelf.
Yeah.
So it was also, for whatever reason, we had Top Secret, so I watched it 8,000 times. Mel Brooks, that was another, like, Blazing Saddles and History of the World.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a zillion times.
Blazing Saddles is still funny. Well, that's really the model for it, isn't it? I guess maybe Marx Brothers, but I mean, but Mel Brooks is really those guys, the Zucker guys, are the next phase two of that in a way.
And early Woody Allen, Bananas, and...
That's right.
Sleeper. I watched a million times.
Sweeper's very funny. But yeah. I think that had a little depth to it. I think there was some thinking involved. Bananas also. When did you get when did you start to think that it might be your calling?
Then the other thing is that Dave Barry, the humor columnist, yeah. is out of Miami.
Mm-hmm.
So as a kid, I read his books and started writing, copying him, basically. Just writing things about my like family or the yard or whatever.
Essays.
Like yeah. comic essays. Like I read sure. one of his books and I was right. like, I can't believe you can do this in the written form.
Right.
And I'd already been obsessed with Saturday Night Live and all that other stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so I started to write kind of comic essays as like a seventh grader.
Uh-huh.
That just for myself, that were just complete ripoffs of Dave Barry.
You didn't read them in front of the class or
nope.
anything?
No, I read them. I wrote them for like my dad appreciated them.
He
so
did?
I wrote them for him.
Oh,
yeah.
That's sweet.
Yeah. So that was my like earliest writing that
did
I
did. Did you ever do anything
writing.
Weird? Like, you know, did your father ever say like, you should contact Dave?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I wrote him a letter because he was like a local celebrity before he became a national.
What is it with Jewish
treasure.
Parents? You know, Dave Barry might enjoy seeing this.
Right. Oh no, I don't think I sent him anything.
Yeah.
You know what I did is I wrote him a letter asking him if he needed an unpaid intern.
Uh huh.
He didn't. He wrote me a very nice note back and said thank you, but I actually don't need anyone.
Was the note hilarious?
I think I'm sure he made some joke.
Yeah,
in it, but I don't.
Not
I don't
memorable
remember.
Though.
Not that. No.
That's disappointing. A little
yeah,
bit, especially as a guy that likes him.
You're yeah, like, it was mainly just nice.
Oh,
it was a nice note.
Yeah, because yeah. he didn't want to crush a seventh grader's spirit.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to say I can't legally hire a seventh grader. Yeah. That's like against the law.
Yeah.
So yeah,
but it was your dad's idea though, right? Had to be.
Maybe I think
he needs some
know.
Help around the house.
I don't know. I'm not. I can't.
Why am I giving your dad that voice?
Yeah.
Hey, Nikki. Why don't you ask Dave Barry?
Wait, is my dad in the room? Where is he? Dad?
This is your life.
Oh, my God, Dad.
How are you, kiddo?
You should do a show in Vegas where you just imitate people's
fictional
family.
Parents?
Yeah,
where
fictional
just make
parents.
It up?
Yeah.
Like a Kreskin show? Like, come up here and tell me your father's name and religion, and I'll try to...
It's like a mix of magic and impressions.
That's always wrong.
Right.
And the voices don't vary much.
Yeah.
Like the Jewish guy's like, hello!
as is the Christian one.
Right, and the non-Jew is like, hello!
And the British one's like, hello!
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 Lovey!
How you doing, Governor? What would be the Jewish British one?
That's challenging.
Hello.
Hello. Oi, hello. We tried. It's embarrassing, but I'm going to leave it in.
Okay.
Because it was challenging and neither one of us could do it.
No.
I wish we had someone here who was like teaching us how to do these things. Like what you need to do a British Jew.
We need Del Close. Come in.
Let's do a herald.
Yeah,
that starts with all you have is British Jew and
on an airplane.
Yeah, on an airplane.
Is that yeah?
Yeah.
In Shakespearean? I don't know. I'm trying to think of other things. Other
that'd
improv
be good.
Things.
In Shakespearean Jew.
Shakespearean.
Which sure
yeah.
is one, right?
I'm sure.
Shylock.
Right.
Right. All right. Getting back to Miami and your sad attempt to work for Dave Barry.
Yes. I also,
child.
At the time...
I'm being very edgy with you, and I apologize.
No, I like it.
Well,
no holds barred. That's your tagline.
Well, I don't know why certain things come out of my personality for certain people, but this is what you're getting.
I like it.
Okay.
I appreciate the honesty. Yeah, but at the time, too, when I would watch Night Live, you know,
yeah.
I watched it, and I didn't want to... I was obsessed with becoming a writer for it.
You were?
Even as a kid, I had no interest in the...
In performing.
I think I had that too.
I didn't know how one did it, but I do remember writing some sketch ideas.
Yeah, I wrote sketches and
when
stuff.
I was very young.
Yeah.
Like
I
10.
I think it all started around 7th and 8th grade that I got really, started to try to do it.
Who did I talk to? I think Judd actually transcribed SNL sketches to take them apart to figure out how they were written.
That's why he's so powerful.
I think it was
I didn't
him.
Do that. I just watched them.
I don't know if it was somebody who, yeah.
And, I'm sure it was him.
And so did you get involved with any of that in high school with the comedy writing other than the columns you wrote for your father?
Yeah.
What?
The columns for my father. Columns for my father sounds like
that's your next movie.
That's the name of my autobiography.
Well, no,
that's going to be
your serious movie where
yeah.
you're like, I'm going to try it. It's close to my heart.
Columns for my father. It stars Robert Redford.
Yeah. And it's co-written. You and Dave Barry write it.
What were we talking about? High school.
You didn't do any?
I went to a boarding school. I went to an Episcopal boarding school, and I started satire magazine in the
which Episcopal boarding school?
St. Paul's School.
So it's not Exeter.
It's not Exeter. But it's near like Exeter. It's like Exeter.
It's
but
the
smaller.
Competitive one. I think
it's more. It's more WASPy than Exeter.
So you're one of those. You know, you're one of those like you know those
denial of my Jewish heritage.
No, you're a good student. Mm-hmm. Your parents are like, we want to get him the best education.
Yeah,
this will set him up for Harvard.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that was the idea.
Yeah. So you,
I'm not even going to deny it.
Yeah,
well, that's what was happening.
That's the only reason that's how the aristocracy works. It's right. Like, you know, Jews have to wedge themselves into weird religious institutions. To yeah. Get
I mean, I've been to more church than synagogue by like a lot. By like, and when I hear Episcopal hymns, I feel at home. Yeah. As does my brother who went to St. Paul. We both feel more at home when you hear like, you know, All Things Bright and Beautiful or whatever. I
really?
Feel like a home. Yeah, I feel at home.
So they pounded that into you.
Oh, yeah. You went to temple. Or sorry, not temple. You went to church 4 times a week.
You had to?
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here.
I mean, they would claim it was like a non-denominational thing, but like you were singing hymns and shit.
So you're
Jesus.
At St. Paul's.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, modern. I'm sure there's a lot of drug addicts and rich kids
oh,
there.
Oh, yeah. It's mainly that. Of course. Of course it is. I didn't fit in. You know, I didn't really fit. I had a great junior high experience. And then I didn't really fit into
high school. In Florida.
In Florida.
Yeah,
like, well, I had a lot of friends. So it was all Jews.
Public junior high?
No.
All right.
Of course not. Come on.
All right.
My dad's a stockbroker. What do you think?
Well, I thought maybe you had a little bit of the townie experience at school where you mixed with the locals and you
no.
got yourself into a little trouble. You wrecked a muscle car because Jesse, your non-Jewish friend, was drunk.
Jesse and Zach. Yeah. No. There was no, no, we didn't mix with townies. But there were very few Jews at St. Paul's. It was actually the only time in my life I wasn't around mainly Jews.
You weren't surrounded by the cultural familiarity
of Judaism.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I didn't even understand that was part of what was making me feel out of sorts, but it really was.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, there's a shorthand
you
know, with a bunch of rich Jewish kids.
Right. Exactly.
You're all living pretty much the exact same life,
mm-hmm.
Give or take. A parent who might
you can
have been
make jokes
who
and
might
make...
have been in prison for tax problems,
right?
Yeah,
you can make jokes and people get your other Jews get them, or
sure.
at least get that you're trying to make a joke.
Sure, yeah, and
if it doesn't work, they make fun of you, and then you make fun, you know. But at a WASP school, it's not like that,
right? You make a joke, and you just get sour faces. Everyone goes, "Who let the Jew in?" No,
that's another great impression. You're killing it. I was like looking around for like my WASPy friend. Yeah. They don't even know. There's no. It's not like school ties. It's not anti-Semitic. You're just not. You just don't. I just didn't fit in.
Culturally different.
It's just culturally totally different.
Were there any people that you kept in touch with? Like, were there any celebrities or scions of wealthy families? I always like when I talk to people who've gone to those prep schools. It's like, was there a Kennedy there? Was there a?
There was a Rockefeller.
Oh, Rockefeller.
There was a Rockefeller. I didn't stand. No, I wasn't friends with anyone there that was like
no,
that.
You weren't friends with the Rockefeller kid?
I was not friends.
Was
with
he? Was he a troublemaker?
She was kind of. They're all troubled, you know, when you have that much like.
Yeah, when you don't have to do anything.
When you
ever.
Have to do anything, you're troubled.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, but.
Your
but
only
yeah.
responsibility in life is to sort of spend some of the family money wisely and try not to destroy yourself with the other family money.
Exactly. And you do the whole thing underneath an imposing oil portrait of your grandfather.
With no lips.
Yeah. So like that is, I feel like...
Your lizard looking grandfather.
Yeah, that whole experience made me really happy I wasn't born into that.
Yeah, well, so what's the one thing you can bank on, you know, as a Jew of our generation? It's like, you know, just two generations back, there's a boat involved and some shitty work.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, my great-grandfather was literally a button salesman.
Love it! Buttons!
Yeah, he's literally a button. He pushed a cart around and sold buttons.
That is great!
Yeah, you
on
know,
on the
so,
Lower East Side?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Who needs buttons?
Yeah.
He's the button man, speaking Yiddish. I love that about Jews. My great-grandfather... just made the ends of shoelaces. What? There's a guy that made those? Yep. People needed them then. Then there's the great grandparents who are sort of like, he did a lot of things.
Yeah.
First there was the food cart. Then he had the dry cleaning place.
He made sauerkraut.
Yeah, made sauerkraut.
For 3 years, we just lived off sauerkraut. He just made sauerkraut.
They'd still do. Now that's a popular profession. I talked to I went to my brother's kid's bat mitzvah.
niche pickling.
That's right.
Yeah.
It happens. Like, I talked to a guy that they, him and his fiance, is a cousin on my brother's wife's side, who they make their own tempeh. And I think up in Northern California. They make tempeh fresh.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, do you do other stuff like pickles at all? And they're like, we tried to do that. And I'm like, well, like a sauerkraut? And they're like, no, there's like two or three people in our area that's already making sauerkraut.
You know what I think when I eat tempeh? Mm. I wish this was homemade.
But it's the weirdest thing. You think?
No, I don't actually think that.
I know, but someone's got to make it. And then you sort of wonder, like, wow, what is it? What would that taste like? Because I don't mind tempeh, but I have to choose from is that weird brick of it.
There was this Japanese restaurant that was briefly open in LA that made fresh tofu at your table, and it tasted exactly like normal tofu.
I thought tofu took some time to sort of ferment.
You can make the softest tofu, like, I guess you can make it
quickly,
yeah, and it didn't taste much different than normal tofu.
So that was just a spectacle, an unnecessary spectacle.
Yeah, exactly. What your friend is doing is a waste of time. I'm really sorry to lay that out there.
Well, they're only distributing it locally to a few restaurants, are hoping to go big with it.
Okay. You know what? I'll invest in that.
Yeah. Okay. Get into the tempeh racket.
Sounds good.
It's the future. I'm not even sure what it is.
No, it's fermented something.
Soy, I think.
Oh, okay.
Back to you.
Okay.
Back to the button salesman. Back to St. Paul's. Here we are.
Yes.
You're surrounded by aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And you start a satire rag.
Yes.
It had not been part of the you created it?
I created it.
Does it still exist now?
No.
Oh, so it didn't.
It went. It went away after I graduated, and then it was on. It was around for a few years.
It didn't catch.
Well, you know, no. Actually, what happened is what happens with all things that are like that, which is they started to make vicious fun of specific students, and so they shut it down.
They get in trouble.
Yeah, they get in trouble.
Well, what was the angle?
The angle of the satire magazine.
Mm-hmm. What was it called?
It was called Spallets.
Spallets.
It was an anagram of St. Paul's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, there you go. Squares. Okay. And nothing better than talking about the comedy you thought of in high school.
And what was the cutting edge satire that you were doing at
it
that
was,
time?
You were just making fun of the different tropes of boarding school.
Uh huh.
You know.
Yeah.
It wasn't. You know.
How many pages are we talking?
It'd be about maybe 20 pages.
Oh yeah.
15 pages.
Do you have a staff of writers?
Oh, yeah, we got a staff.
So people you put together.
It was all the nerds. It was all the nerds. There were a few Jews.
Yeah.
And nerdy people.
Yeah.
And we all got
comedy
together.
Comedy nerds,
yeah.
So you had to get a charter and stuff. Did you have to? Or whatever?
We got approval from the, you know.
You had to do some paperwork.
We had to do a little paperwork. We got a tiny like amount of money to do it.
And you were the editor.
I was the editor.
So this
and
is
founder,
what, founder and editor founder of
Spallets, and it was really fun.
Spallets,
yeah.
But this was a practical experience for you that
it was
made you learn deliberation of assignments.
Yeah,
editing.
Yeah,
what's funny, what isn't funny.
How to let down people gently.
Oh, why'd you
that
have to do that?
That was something. Well, you know, what happened is there was a period of time where I was, they were putting together an issue, right? We were all putting together an issue, and I suddenly found that I had a girlfriend, so I wasn't around for that.
Yeah.
And I came back to look at the issue, and I didn't think it was good.
Right.
And I said to everyone, this is not good.
That's how you said it?
That's how I said it. And I said, this isn't good. And this is true. This is a thing that I learned from
this
experience.
Did you ever say this? Who fucking wrote this? Well, which one of you assholes? Any of that?
I should have. No, I just said, this is not good. This isn't good.
It's not up to par.
And then some of them started crying. And then I realized, I'm not kidding. And then I probably was slightly meaner than this is not good, but it was around.
I think now I'm starting to question your whole story.
No.
This is not good made someone cry. That kid had trouble anyway.
They've been working on it constantly for like a while. It takes, you know, especially at that time, it takes a while to pull this stuff together with Photoshop.
Did one kid just
or
start
like with the layout program?
He was trying to hold in his tears, and then
at first there was silence, and I was kind of like tearing it apart. And then, but I literally learned. I literally learned from that, and you take that into when you're trying to criticize someone, whoever it is.
Yeah.
You have to do it in a way where they feel really good about the criticism you're giving them.
Right.
I think to then make that everyone excited.
So this is not good is not tearing it apart. So there was some tearing going on that you're
Yeah,
not
well then I gave specific examples of what was bad about
but
it.
But was there ever this sort of like you thought this was funny?
Yeah, I probably said that. I think I said this is not good. This isn't funny. What's funny about this?
Yeah.
This isn't good.
Yeah, but none of the sort of like you're not right for humor.
No, we didn't have access to enough people to kick people off.
Oh.
Yeah.
But did
my senior year, I remember two hot girls joined, probably just to put it on their resume.
That they
were
for Spallets.
But they only came to the photo for the yearbook, but we were all really excited. That's we couldn't believe it.
That's so sad. They're here.
Guys, we got two.
So it's just a picture of a bunch of nerds
looking
at two girls.
It's literally a bunch of nerds. Exactly. It really is. I never saw them again, but I didn't care. I was like, whatever.
Did any of those guys go on to be writers? Any of the guys that you knew in high school, are you still friends with any of them?
I'm friends with them. No, none of them went on to
no
do
show
this.
Business?
No show business from that. Yeah.
All right, so after Spallets, the tremendous success.
And I did a radio show in boarding school. Too.
Really?
Yeah. Briefly.
What was that?
That was, I did it, I would rip off Saturday Night Live skits and put them on.
You'd steal them.
I'd do like the version, I'd replace the like character, you know. I remember I can't remember the skit now, but there was an SNL skit that we kind of ripped off, you know, and
so
changed.
Appropriating, not a problem for you early on.
Early on, no, definitely not a problem. As I'm learning, I guess it's the equivalent of like, you know, trying to like figure out how those things work.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Okay. We'll let you off. I know. Yeah. You
it was high
learn.
School. It stopped. It stopped after that.
I don't know if there's YouTube out there of it. You could be in
there
trouble.
There definitely isn't. I'm too old for that.
Right now there's someone looking. I'm going to hang this Nick Stoller guy up.
Yeah.
This guy's going down.
Well, the good thing, though, about being at an Episcopal school is no one else was into comedy, so they didn't know I was ripping it off.
But I do think that is like a learning process. And, you know, it's some version of whether it was Judd or whoever it was that I talked to who was writing those scripts down for just to look at them.
Yeah.
Or just to feel where the beats are. It's important.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of, like, I don't know, I feel like you're in high school and, like, you know, the president of your high school does like a top 10 list.
Yeah.
Like they're ripping off Letterman, but also who cares? It's high school. You know,
yeah,
it's
I
like,
get it.
You know, so it's like that.
All right. So you got the grades to get into Harvard, obviously.
Yes.
Who do I know from your group in Harvard?
Well, you know, Mike Schur. He created Parks and Rec and Brooklyn Nine-Nine. A lot of TV guys.
Oh, yeah,
guys.
I met that guy. I just did a panel with him.
Yeah. He did a lot of.
How old are you?
I'm 38.
Oh, boy. So, yeah. Tough life you're living.
I know, it's hard.
Yeah, you have, hard. Maybe something will happen for you eventually.
I hope so. I hope so. Got my fingers crossed.
Who else was there?
I'm trying to think who was... Oh, BJ Novak. Who else?
What was he like then?
I knew
Did
him a little.
Did he make an impression on you?
Yeah, he was very sure of himself. I didn't know him that well, but he was yeah,
that goes
guy.
A long way, my friend.
Yeah.
But he being was sure of yourself.
And I knew he did stand-up, which blew my mind. Like, I couldn't believe people were doing stand-up.
I just saw him in Nashville.
Oh, okay.
He read from his book.
Oh, cool.
And he was very confident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he is. Yeah. you need that if you're going to be in front of the camera.
But what is this Harvard thing? What is it? All right, so you're...
It's a real conspiracy. The Lampoon. It's all the Harvard Lampoon. And it's a real conspiracy. All the comedy.
It's not a conspiracy. It's a brotherhood.
Brotherhood, yeah.
But still, like, you know, I've talked to Conan...
Mm-hmm.
About Harvard. I feel like I've talked to a couple of other Harvard people.
Have you been to the Lampoon?
I've walked by it many times. I went to school in Boston.
Okay.
So I would go over to Harvard.
Yeah.
And I would, you know, hang out and be like, I don't know what the big deal is.
Whatever.
Yeah, I'd go
this
right.
This is dumb.
I'd go right onto the quad and go like, do you guys think you're better than me?
Right.
And they'd remove me.
Yeah.
No.
And
no
one would respond.
No.
It was even worse.
Like, that guy's here again.
Sir, do you need any help finding the tube?
I know where I am.
Sir, are you okay?
I'm just going to the Tasty.
Would you care for some hot soup?
Yeah. Did you get to go to the Tasty?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love
it's
the
It's gone
Tasty.
Now.
I know. It's all gone.
Everything's
gone.
It's all banks. They're all different banks.
They're going to tear Harvard down, I heard.
And just replace it with a bank.
Yeah. Why not? A bank and a studio.
And yeah, you can a, shoot. You can now shoot
and,
at Harvard
and a training center for third world dictators. So all right, so but like I'm sort of mystified by it. But obviously, you know, you're a well adjusted guy. You had your mind and you.
But I was also obsessed with the Lampoon. Like I was obsessed with it before because I was obsessed with comedy writing. I knew about like Doug Kenny and like those people who
the looked, original Lampoon,
the original Lampoon. And I was and then I became obsessed with the current Lampoon and knew that it had some entree into TV writing, which is what I wanted to do. So. I would read the Lampoons and in high school, and I really wanted to be on the Lampoon.
But you read the old stuff, and you like, you know, you were a fan of Animal House, perhaps?
Yeah, oh yeah, of course.
And, but you read some of the archival Lampoons?
Yeah,
PG
I read...
PG O'Rourke, Tony Hendra, Kenny.
Yeah, once I knew about Doug Kenny probably from Animal House, and then I just knew about him, and then I read a lot of those, all of the archival stuff is...
Yeah.
In the library at the Lampoon. So I read those once I was on the Lampoon. I read all those. And they're so funny.
What, the actual National Lampoon?
The actual National Lampoon.
And then the actual Lampoon going back to, what, the 1800s or whatever?
That's not as funny. Not
the,
as good.
Didn't get the references.
No. There's also the collected works of Punch, that British comedy. That also is not funny.
Yeah.
I've tried to read it to be like, you know, it's interesting.
Did you glean anything from it?
No. Just that everything ends.
But what is the education? What is the education?
That life is short.
Your life is short. So make some money.
Make some money now because in a split second, no one will care.
Make sure you make friends here.
Right. Be nice because then you get more flops.
Yeah. but is there the curriculum, what did you study?
English.
All right. So how does it work? But you're bright.
Once I got to Harvard, I was like, I'm basically done studying. I just want to get on Lampoon and have a good time.
But how did you do? What was your GPA?
It was like, the thing about Harvard is once you get in, it's very easy to get like a B or B plus.
Yeah.
It's basically impossible to get like an A.
Yeah.
So like, I was just like, I'm fine with a B or B plus.
But you were able to do work, you had discipline, you did what you had to do. And
boarding school teaches you some of that too.
Right.
Because you learn how to deal with your time.
But you know? The track you were on was not the bad one.
No.
Yeah, there was just no way that was going to happen.
No.
So you go to Harvard, but is there some magic? Is there something like outside of the weird fraternal brotherhood of the Lampoon and Harvard in general that's designed to sort of control and maintain the power in all industries?
Yeah.
Is there some other secret education?
There's literally, you've seen Harry Potter. There's literally magic.
There is, right?
No, there's, you get, yeah.
Like you go to the Lampoon and a magic clown. You meet a magic clown.
You meet a magic clown.
Yeah.
And a beam of magic light comes out of his crotch.
Yeah, of course it does. Right out of his crotch.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I learned, you know, in college, I learned a lot about comedy from the Lampoon, and also I did improv comedy, and both of those things helped me a lot.
But what happens in the Lampoon? I mean, I know I talked to Conan about it, but I don't know if I'm clear on it. What do you do there?
Well, you're hanging out with a lot of people who are obsessed with comedy and comedy writing all the time, and you're basically constantly riffing all day, which is something that was new to me.
For the magazine.
For the magazine, and also you're just hanging out and riffing.
Right.
Which was, you know, a bit exhausting. Like sometimes, like there are some people who just spend their whole lives at the Lampoon. I was someone who spent half my life there and half my life doing other stuff.
Right.
And, you know, and
what
so
what was the other stuff?
Improv. Then also just hanging out with my roommates and stuff.
Yeah. What'd they end up doing?
One is a reporter.
Yeah.
One works in finance.
Finance.
Yeah. It's one vague. Works in publishing. Yeah, I know. It is vague. He explains to me every time what he does and I can never remember.
Yeah.
He lives in England. He does finance.
Yeah. He's a finance guy.
But they were
your buddies.
Yeah, they were my friends.
And then you go over to Lampoon and then just get into the mix.
Get into the mix and riff.
The comedic cockfight.
Exactly.
Who's going to get to the top of the bat?
Who's going to be able to riff the longest and the best?
Who's going to tag this fucker?
Right.
Yeah.
But like that riffing is a good, it was like a comedy writer's room, which I didn't understand. So you learn to like riff, I guess.
Who was the funniest guy there?
At the time?
Yeah.
Oh, there are a bunch.
Be honest.
Be honest.
Couple names.
Couple names. Mike Schur is very funny.
Okay.
Super funny guy. This guy, Charlie Grandy.
What happened to that guy?
He writes for Mindy.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, he's super funny. Matt Murray.
Yeah.
Super funny
guy.
What's
he up to now?
He writes for Parks.
Give me one guy that you don't know what happened to. No one knows what happened to that guy.
No, I don't know. I know what all of them.
That's why it's unrealistic. That's why it's not real life, and that's why it's not fair.
No, there's a guy. There's a guy that.
Where's the guy that went off the rails? Oh, no, that guy lost his mind.
There was actually one guy I wasn't in touch with for a while, and I wondered what happened to him. And then we reconnected over email because I was posting lots of. I'm into artisan baking.
What?
I'm into baking breads.
Okay, fine.
It's how I relax. Whatever, it doesn't matter.
This guy contacted me.
He contacted me and was like, "I'm into this too."
Breads. I'm writing that down. Artisan bread.
You're putting together a kind of pattern.
No, you used the word artisan right here in front of me. You're into artisan bread.
Artisan baking.
You said that publicly.
I'm proud of it. I'm not gonna be knocked down for that.
I just, you know, there's a way to get into that a little more delicately.
Was a bit shocking.
It was shocking. Like you say, like why it's if weird. How you do it next time, next interview.
Mm-hmm.
I have an interesting hobby. I enjoy baking breads. And then people are like, really? What kind of breads? Well, I guess some people would call them artisan breads, but
humble bragging. I don't humble brag.
Where's the humble brag?
I guess some people would call it artisan baking. You just gotta own it.
But when you say artisan breads,
yeah.
You've elevated yourself. You're like Harvard in your hobbies. You don't. I bake. I enjoy baking breads. I do a lot of different kinds of breads. No, I'm artisan breads.
Yeah,
fine.
They're artisan.
Well,
I can show you photos.
What does it mean? What does artisan bread mean? So you do a focaccia. What makes it art? Do you make focaccia?
No, I haven't done that.
What do you make? A rye bread?
I've made a Gruyere loaf.
Okay, well, that sounds a little artisan.
The point is that one of the guys...
No, the point is, have you done the classics?
I've done white bread, like a sourdough.
Uh-huh.
I did a rye.
You did a rye?
I did a rye. It came out well. It was a little flat.
A little dense?
It was a little dense.
That's a problem.
It was good.
Because it's hard to get it to get the
It's hard to get rye to rise.
Right, and the nice crust, and then you... It had a good crust, but it just didn't rise well. Dense.
It was dense. It rose enough, like it was still good, but it was a little dense.
But have you ever baked a bread because it relaxes you, and then when the final product comes out, you just angrily throw it away? You eat like a few chunks of it angrily, and then you're like, fuck this, and you throw it away?
I've thrown away some breads.
Yeah.
But the process is relaxing.
Yeah, but that might be the real art, is the throwing away the breads angrily.
That's like a koan? I don't know. What is that?
Yes. So you made a Gruyere loaf, and this is what defines your hobby.
I enjoy.
Look, I like cooking too, and yeah. I do not know why.
Do you bake?
I have.
Okay, do you make bread?
No, I don't make bread.
You should try it. It's relaxing.
I haven't done a lot of cooking lately. I have a few cake recipes I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
I've made some cornbreads. I have made a rye that came out dense, and it was not my thing. It takes a lot of patience to make bread, and I'm afraid of bread. It's a lot of useless calories in bread. I know a lot of people like bread. I don't know why I'm taking this tone with you, but you're an artisan baker on the side.
You seem mad.
I'm a little mad.
You're a little angry right now. I guess I use the term, with my friends, I'm an artisan baker as ironically all the time.
Fine,
and I dropped it on you without that familiarity.
That's right.
You bring forth such a familiarity that I thought I could use it, because I was like, oh, now we're old friends and you'll understand I'm being kind of ironic.
I
forgot that this is an interview that you don't know me that well.
I think you're backpedaling now. I think that when you said it to me, it was in earnest.
It was, okay. It was... We're at kind of a standoff.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But we can get through it.
Yeah.
Tell me about your failures as an improv performer.
Should I show you the photos of the artisan bread?
After.
Okay.
After.
Okay.
No, so you did improv, and I have to assume that hanging out the Lampoon and riffing with those guys, and now I understand it. I don't know that I really understood it. That you really are.
And you also just drink and party and do college shit with
right,
them.
Right, but
so
the
that's
idea
like, that's
is,
like a big part of
but
it.
But the idea is writing comedy.
Yeah, you're writing comedy and you're hanging out with people who are all obsessed with comedy. It's like, you know, I imagine when you're hanging out with comics, you're all joking around. It's like that. It's that kind of, everyone is intensely joking
That's
around.
That's right. You're with brilliant people saying brilliant things.
Yeah.
And
just joking.
Yeah.
Which I hadn't been around before.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. But the improv thing, I assume that the combination of the two, working with other people, learning those chops, because you had to learn something about performing in order to direct.
Yes, that was with improv, and I did some acting too in college, and both things helped me understand more about acting.
Okay.
And with improv too, you're yelling out, you know, you're thinking of stuff on the spot, and what you realize in improv is there's nothing scary about that.
Yeah.
That, like, you know, a few things will fail, but who cares? And so
you learned how to transcend the fear of not getting a laugh.
Yes.
That's a big one.
Which is big, yeah.
So like, because you sort of dismiss it like, you know, you just did, and then you don't have to be afraid, but it's scary at first.
Yeah, and it's scary, and also you realize that your fellow performer will help you. So if I go out and do a bad joke, my friend might do a good one and help me out.
Unless your friend like really enjoys watching you fail.
Yeah.
That's how he gets a laugh.
Right.
That's more a comic thing.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, he's tanking. That's hilarious.
because when you're tanking in improv, you're bringing everyone down with you.
Yeah. Yeah. I would do that on purpose, I think, if I was an improv
Did you do improv?
No.
There seems to be a real divide, because I was
doing
terrified.
It now.
I guess we're doing a little show.
Yeah, we're doing it now.
We're doing a bit of a show.
Yes, and?
Yes. Although you really knowed my artisan baker bit.
I don't know
you
if
really
I,
knowed it.
I don't know if I knowed it, but I did stop us. I wanted more clarification.
That was the opposite of no, but. That was a no, but.
I don't think so.
You
I
no,
think,
butted
I
that.
I think that what we got to was, you know.
If I had an improv guy here, they would get into it. And we would do a good kind of skit about
artisan.
But wait,
artisan. If I didn't do what I did, we would not have gotten to the hilarious Gruyere loaf, which you again presented as serious.
I should have brought it, because if I brought the Gruyere loaf, you would You would backpedal. I wouldn't be the one backpedaling.
No, I'm sure it'd be great.
It's delicious.
I'm just being a dick because you went to Harvard.
Oh, okay. Oh,
okay,
now I understand what's happening.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my
you okay?
God. Huge relief.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. I should have worn a Harvard sweatshirt.
You should have.
It would have just been just started off that way.
No, it's been fun, I think.
Yeah.
Hasn't it?
It's been great.
Oh, okay.
I love this.
I didn't get the feeling that you were really taking it.
No, I'm having a good time.
It's my problem.
No.
It's not your problem that I failed. thank God something worked out.
Yeah.
But all right, so now tell me how the conspiracy. Tell me how I'm just happy something worked out for me at 48 years old. I'm glad that everything.
Right.
You know, I hope to God that your life keeps going as well as it does.
It is weird though, like at my age, when I run into people who are still mad about Harvard for some reason.
I beg your pardon?
Like you'll run into someone, and you'll be like, oh, like they'll be like, where do you go to college? I'll be like, Harvard, and they'll be like, oh, you went to Harvard. It's like, we're now like all 40. Come on. Let's move on.
It doesn't go away. Why would you think that would go away?
Because I don't know. Everyone's found their own route.
Have they?
Some people haven't. But a lot of people from Harvard haven't found their own. At this point,
yeah,
you can't. Yeah. Anyways.
No, I get it. I think like within the comedy community, there's this idea that it gives you, I think, false entree.
Yes.
Into.
It's a huge leg up.
Yeah.
It is.
And I think that pisses some people off,
as it should,
right?
Because it's a huge leg up. Yeah.
But do you find in your experience, are there people that went to Harvard that got that leg up that didn't deserve it?
There are people who maybe got their first job
right.
and maybe didn't deserve it, but then you don't, you know,
you can't last. You
can't
suck.
Yeah, if you suck, you don't right. go on. So that, like that's. But yeah, it certainly helps people. You know.
So how does that work exactly? So when you graduated. Mm-hmm. What did you do? Did you come out here immediately?
No, I went to New York.
Okay.
And I worked in advertising, and I tried to...
Really?
Yeah, I worked
in advertising. What the fuck was that about?
Well, I was trying to break into the shows there in New York.
Right. Which shows?
Letterman? Letterman, Saturday Night Live.
So you're submitting packages,
yeah.
monologue ideas, jokes, and sketches.
Right.
Exactly. To SNL.
Threw it to SNL.
David Letterman.
Letterman, yeah. And I think Conan.
Did you have an agent immediately?
No, I didn't have an agent.
How'd you send? You just mailed a package?
Like through friends.
Okay.
Through friends that I might know, yeah. Nothing happened. No.
So you're like, I'm going to be a copywriter?
Well, I wanted a job. I wanted to have a job to know I could just have a normal job.
Right.
Because I didn't, you know, at that point was like, I don't know if this will happen.
Right.
So I want to have a job just to know I can have a job.
Right.
So I tried to.
And to see what that felt like.
Yeah. And I was very like anxious about graduating from college. I wanted to have something lined up. So I got an internship at a ad firm.
The idea was you can take your comedy chops and apply it to, hey, buy a drink.
Exactly.
Yeah. Look at these shoes.
This is, yeah. You should do some copywriting. Hey, eat this food.
Yeah. Eat this.
Check out my phone.
Yeah. This is the best one, stupid. Hey, dummy, this is the best.
You'll like this shirt.
Yeah. Wow, someone's going to rip that off.
Advertising taught me something.
Mm-hmm.
Because it forced me to write about stuff I didn't want to write about.
Yeah.
So it forced me to get over writer's block or whatever that is.
To
see it as a job. And yeah. that, and you know, and I think, you know, you can sit, you know, at the time, like I would look at like a Molson Canadian and I'd have to write like 20 ideas for it. And that's like, it's not exactly inspiring.
Right.
So, but it, you know, it was really good training ground just for treating it like a job.
So when did that crap out on you?
I quit and moved to LA.
Okay.
Because I was doing pretty well in advertising, and the first year in advertising, you don't get paid that much.
Right.
And then if you're doing well, they start to pay you well, and I knew that if that happened, I would never quit.
It'd be hard for you to leave.
Yeah.
So who'd you call out here when you're like, I'm coming?
I called a friend of mine.
From Harvard?
From Harvard, yeah. And I crashed on his couch and started to apply to stuff out here.
But okay, so let's talk about this this cachet.
Yes.
So when you come out here as a Harvard grad who did some time.
So mad.
I'm not mad.
You're doing great.
I'm not mad. I'm doing good.
I'm trying to impress you. And
you
I'm the one that went to Harvard.
You are.
I'm trying to impress you.
Yeah, but it's okay. I appreciate that. So you come out here. You swept on a couch. That sounds like it must have been hard for you.
It was. I'd never done it before. I thought couches were just for sitting.
So you call up who?
And it wasn't. I'd only sat on silk couches.
Yeah.
And it was some sort of linen.
Ugh, awful.
Disgusting.
It's really hard for you.
Disgusting.
I'm sorry you had to go through that.
It was horrible.
Yeah, for how long? Like 3-4 days?
Viewers can't see it, but I'm crying right now.
Yeah, I know. I knew
viewers,
I'd get
listeners,
you.
Listeners
I,
can't
I knew
hear
I'd
it.
Get you to cry. Yeah.
That's what happens on the show.
Yeah.
Everyone cries.
You spent like a week on a couch, and then you were employed.
Yeah. And then I was employed. It was a hard week, though.
I bet.
It was tough.
No, so you call your friend who went to Harvard, and you hang out with him. So what is, like, I'm not being condescending.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to.
Yeah. You can condescend all you want.
I've already done that.
Yeah.
Let's get real.
Right.
So I want to understand this Harvard Brotherhood. So,
right.
So what...
Harvard Brotherhood.
No, but you focus. Like, you start wanting to get writer work.
Yeah.
So you reach out to who?
So my friend Mike Schur, who I mentioned.
And what was he doing at that time?
He wrote for SNL.
Oh, but he was in LA?
He was in New York. So he helped me. His office mate was this guy, Mike McCullers, who co-wrote the Austin Powers movies.
Okay.
And he, Mike recommended
me. Is he a Harvard guy?
No.
Oh.
Mike McCullers is Yale.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
So, do you want me to let that settle in? Or is
no,
that
I'm good.
You
know, I'm
are,
good.
You, are you okay?
No, I'm fine.
Are you? How mad are you?
I'm not mad. You guys deserve it. You focused. You did the
in
work.
High school. We happened to just
I know
to focus.
I know you have discipline. I get
right.
it. I get it.
So and McCullers was doing a show, Austin Powers animated series that was going to be on HBO.
Right.
So I applied to that.
Okay.
And got a writing job on that.
So that's the way it worked.
Yeah.
Your Harvard buddy from the Lampoon, Michael Schur.
Michael Schur
says, "Hey, McCullers, they got this kid that I know from Harvard. Funny guy,
right?
Funny. He quit advertising because he was making too much money, and
I wasn't yet.
Okay, he almost made a lot of money, and he decided that he wants to write.
I'm gonna get killed after this. Someone's gonna literally kill me.
No,
it's fine.
And so you write on the animated show, and that gets you started.
That got me started. That got me my agent.
Okay.
So then Austin Powers animated series goes for 10 weeks, and then the powers that be decide they don't want to do it, and so it gets shut down.
But you made a few bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I got my agent.
Right.
And then I kind of have a year of doing nothing. Like my
really
agent,
nothing?
Really not. I mean, I'm writing. I'm trying to write spec scripts and stuff.
For
to
what?
Try to get on TV shows. I mean, at the time I was writing, I'm sure I was writing like a Just Shoot Me spec script.
Sure.
Or, you know, just whatever was on at the time.
Working. Doing the thing.
Just trying to, you know. And then Judd was hiring for Undeclared.
Right.
And he wanted people close to college age, and he hired out of UTA completely. And I mean, and it's one of those really lucky things. If I hadn't been at UTA, I wouldn't have been hired.
Right. And he didn't know you.
He did not know
you. But you submitted what?
He asked to submit story ideas.
Uh-huh.
So I submitted a bunch of, and I love Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah.
And I submitted stuff. And you know, his style of comedy was what I grew to love, you know?
Right.
I mean, I started with that, you know, broader stuff, but
sure.
then got really into like James Brooks and
right.
later Woody Allen and, you know, Nora Ephron, all that stuff. You
uh-huh.
know? So that kind of
deeper
that kind
stuff.
Of deeper stuff.
Yeah.
Know? And so I was with Freaks and Geeks, I was like, oh my God, someone's doing this. And then from there, then that show went away, but I met like Seth, like, he and I were office mates, and, there's a lot of people on that show that were awesome. Rodney Rothman, someone else
So that's where you built a relationship with Seth.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And
Jason Segel, who was a recurring guest star or whatever. Then that show goes away, it was canceled or whatever. And then I had another year of trying to get on shows and it wasn't, happening. And then Judd asked me if I wanted to write a script with him. That was for a screenplay. And I was also at the time writing screenplplays for myself.
When did you get married?
I got married in 2005.
So after this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got married after this. My first screenwriting gig was around when my wife moved out not moved out. I was in a long distance relationship.
Where
briefly.
Was she?
She was in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
How did you meet someone in Ann Arbor?
She went to Harvard. We met through friends.
Good story. She went to Harvard. What does she do?
She is a novelist.
Really?
But she wrote a book, and then she's been a mom.
Two writers, huh? How
two
many
writers.
Kids do you have?
We have two daughters.
Really?
Yeah.
How old are they?
6 and 1.
How's that going?
It's going great.
5-year gap.
Yeah.
It's a long 5-year
gap, yeah.
Was that a plan?
No, that was not a plan.
Yeah.
The first one was easy. The second one required a lot of science.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I get it. But you always wanted two.
Yes, we wanted two.
So what movie did you write with Judd?
We wrote a movie for Sandler that didn't happen, but it was a good experience. I mean, it we wrote the script.
So this is before Judd is Judd, really?
Yeah, right. This is before Judd is Judd. And then
Okay. What was that movie about?
It was about like a middle child, like this big family, who's like a disaster. And then we wrote, and then he asked me to write Fun with Dick and Jane with him.
That's a rewrite, right?
That was, yeah, it was a remake of the
George Segal one,
yeah.
Yeah. That didn't do great, right?
It weirdly did do well.
It did.
Yeah. It's, you know.
Who was in that again?
It was Jim Carrey and Tia Leone, Alec Baldwin.
Yeah. Tia Leone.
Yeah.
I love her.
And Alec Baldwin's playing a little bit of what he played on later on 30 Rock. It's like that kind of character a little bit.
Jim Carrey too, who you worked with again.
Yeah, I worked with him on Yesterday.
So now you've written a movie that's become a movie.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
And then that started to get me screenwriting work. Mm-hmm. So then I started to write, you know, scripts basically, and doing rewrite jobs and stuff. And then
secret rewrite jobs on what?
I worked on this movie called Just My Luck. That was a Phil Lindsay Lohan film. So that was a rewrite job I did.
Yeah.
You know, movies like that.
It's sort of an ironic title.
I know.
If it's not about drug addiction.
I know, right. It was the first one where she started to be weird, I think. I think that was the first
one. But
when
someone does that, like, I don't know that people really know that writers get sort of, they get to do passes on scripts and they get paid for that script doctor work.
Yeah.
And that's a good gig.
It is, yeah.
Because you don't really have anything to lose.
No.
And, but you did a lot of that?
Yeah, I did a lot of that. Well, it started first.
Punch up.
During Undeclared, I wrote a bunch of screenplays that were bad.
Right.
But I was to kind of learn how to do it.
Right.
And then I wrote a spec script that was good that didn't sell or, you know, anything, but got me meetings. And
that's a good gig. So then how do you get from there to direct Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
Judd had done Superbad and 40 Old. He'd produced Superbad and had done 40 Old Virgin and he was doing Knocked Up. That's what it was. He was doing Knocked Up and it was coming together well. And he was starting to become Judd. He had a lot of leverage.
Yeah.
And Segal told me about, Jason and I really bonded kind of during Undeclared, and we kind of found a lot of the same stuff funny.
Yeah.
Like I always say, it's like grown men crying.
Yeah.
Is kind of what we both find interesting.
Well, he seems to be able to play that weird, vulnerable dude a lot.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of heart to it, whether it's genuine or not, I don't know, but he can play it.
Oh, it's totally genuine.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we did that on Undeclared. The episode I wrote was for him, and he finds out in that episode that his long-distance girlfriend cheated on him with Jay Baruchel, and he comes to beat up Jay Baruchel.
Right.
So, girlfriend played by Carla Gallo. So that was like, and that, I mean, that is very similar to Sarah Marshall, you know, in certain ways, emotionally.
Right.
So we really, you know, he also is a Jew who doesn't look totally Jewish, who went to an Episcopal school. So we found that out much later.
Right.
We had those, you know.
Right.
But yeah, so then I said so Segal was telling me about his script for Sarah Marshall, but he didn't have a ton of screenwriting experience.
It was his script.
It was his script, yeah.
Yeah.
So then I said to Judd, if I kind of guide Segal through the writing process, help him, will you support me as a director? And Judd, you know, and TV shows, writers are kind of the directors a little bit, you know?
Sure.
And Judd, you know, was like, sure, and supported me, you know.
What does that mean, support you do?
Like, go to the studio and say, I want Nick to direct this.
And he's producing it.
He's producing it. And he had leverage because, like, Virgin had done
movies.
Well.
Yeah.
Knocked Up was going to do clearly good, coming out well, and Superbad was coming out well.
So that's your first directing gig, a big movie.
Yeah.
And how do you step up for that? Other than just the confidence that you have because of who you are.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, it was, the main thing that was really hard was learning coverage.
Right.
So like, I didn't understand coverage.
Judd loves coverage.
He loves coverage.
Yes.
But I don't mean like, how much coverage to shoot, but I literally didn't understand where to move the camera and eye lines and all of that.
That's why you got a good DP, right?
Yeah, I got a great DP. Right. This guy Russ Alsobrook,
who says things like, "Hey, you might want to shoot the other guy from that side."
Yes,
and you're like, "Oh,
yeah,
oh, I knew that."
And there's some of the eye lines don't work in that movie. There's
really?
Like a joke that doesn't work because the eye lines are messed up because I didn't know what I was doing. Like,
I actually was trying to pay more attention to that on my TV show because Judd actually encouraged me to direct an episode.
Yeah. Did you like it?
Which I did. Well, it was hard because I'm in every scene.
What do you do?
You trust your DP a lot.
Okay.
And you direct, you know, from the set. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, actually looking at playback and stuff, I can only do if absolutely necessary because we didn't have time.
How many days per episode?
Three.
Wow.
So
That's
so
crazy.
Like, I'd like to try it again with a little more engagement, but it was a great experience.
Yeah. No, it's directing so much fun.
So, but you had your back covered. Like, Judd was there, and he knew what he was doing. Your DP was good, and he knew what he was doing. So you were. It was a cushy way to learn how to do it.
Yes. Yeah, and there was also Judd, actually, he's really around for pre-production, for writing, for casting, but then he was only around for a week or two during the shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this producer, Shauna Robertson, who...
So you were kind of on your own. That must have been a little nerve-wracking.
It is, but Shauna was there, and she really helped me a lot, too. So there was... She'd produced a bunch of stuff, and so knew what she was doing. And then Russ the DP, also knew what he was doing. So, but yeah, it was... I mean, after the movie turned out well, or fine, or whatever... Jason said to me that first week, I was worried.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was like, this was not... He thought it was going poorly, because I just didn't know... I was learning how to do it.
Were you panicky?
Not really, because I asked a lot of questions. I think
that's the testament to what, you know, why you're successful in a way, is that if you're going to be the guy that's sort of like, all right, I am new to this, you all know I'm new to this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I need to learn, but I'm not going to freak out.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, because I think, like, when I talk to directors, you know, something that they share is they generally keep their shit together in terms of the logistics of things. They may get passionate about yelling at actors or whatever, but you're managing an awful lot of responsibility.
Yeah,
and you have to be able to do that.
Yeah, and you have to, like, a lot of the advice I got was, don't pretend you know something if you don't.
Sure, ask a question.
So I was constantly asking questions.
And that made Jason nervous?
No, that's not what made him nervous. What made him nervous is I didn't understand coverage. So I literally didn't understand how to shoot the scene we were doing. No, what made him nervous was totally legitimate. No, seeing your director ask a lot of questions isn't... That's like, oh, great, he wants to know how this works.
Right, but not knowing how to direct is
not knowing how to direct. And there being like a half-hour break as like I sit with the DP and he draws what eye lines. Like, he's literally...
Explaining
eye lines, like in the Sidney Lumet Making Movies book.
Right.
It's like, yeah, that's what made him nervous. I also, the first week, I didn't know, like, I was second-guessing my instincts, because it's all tone.
Yeah.
With comedy, it's all tone, which is why I think comedy writers can make good, if you have social skills, you can make a good director, because it's all tone. It's more that than visuals. It's
like, what do you mean?
Like, what's funny? Like, you know what, a comedy writer knows what's funny, you know?
What the emotional weight of a scene is.
Yeah, the point of a scene and what's funny about it, you know? And so, like, for example, I've written movies where I see the scene after they've shot it and the director just didn't get what was funny about it. And it's
like, what movie?
I don't want to insult movies, but
okay.
I just don't want to. You don't want to put that shit out there.
No,
you know?
You're right. Yeah, sure. But I've seen it happen. Okay.
Yeah. And so, but anyways, I was second guessing my tone. So another thing I was doing was having Jason be way too broad.
Yeah.
In some stuff, and I would get different levels. You know, I'd shoot him being grounded and normal, which is, you know, the funniest.
Right.
Obviously, the only, you know. And then I'd shoot really broad stuff, and Judd called me and was like, "What is going on there? Why are you shooting this crazy broad stuff?" And I was like, "I'm trying to learn. I don't know."
Yeah.
So yeah.
And he said, "Stop it."
I started to just go with more with my instinct of like, let's make this not, you know, not as broad.
So then after that, you did some writing.
Yes.
And that movie turned out okay. Yes, Man.
Yeah. Turned out fine.
Yeah.
I wrote that and then, that actually coincided with Sarah Marshall. I wrote that and then had to leave it to do, to direct Sarah Marshall. And then Jared Paul and Andy Mogul rewrote it.
Uh-huh.
Very funny guys.
And then you get him to the Greek.
Yeah.
And wrote and direct that.
Yes.
And that was based on those characters that you had familiarity with.
Yeah. Well, Jonah and Russell had really good chemistry at the table read. And it seemed really funny to have them do a movie on, like, they had just great chemistry. I was like, I wanted to see what would happen.
I think Jonah is a pretty good adapter. Like, I think that, like, he could probably have pretty good chemistry with anybody. There's just some weird thing about him that, you know, whether it's serious or comedic, you know, he knows how to sort of be in relationship comedically with somebody.
It's true. He's really good. And also you could tell when in their scenes together, they were really trying to figure each other out.
Right.
Which is always a good premise for a comedy.
Uh-huh.
So like most of Getting to the Greek is them just trying to figure each other out.
That was a fun romp.
Yeah. It was a good romp.
Yeah.
It was a good romp.
And then Gulliver's Travels you wrote, so that didn't fall on you, whatever happened there.
Yeah.
Then you did a Muppets movie.
Yes. I wrote the Muppets with Siegel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and James Bobin. It was really fun. Yeah, it was incredible.
Was that a passion project, or did Jason think, like, you know, this is going to be a cash cow?
No, it was a passion project. After, I think it was right before Sarah Marshall came out, but we had fun collaborating on that, he called me. He had a general meeting kind of at Disney. Mm-hmm. And they said, what are you interested in? He said, what are you guys doing with the Muppets? And they said, we don't know. And then he ended up calling me and saying, do you want to write a Muppet movie? And I was like, of course. And we wrote it over many years. It took a while to get the ball rolling at the studio.
And you got to deal with the Muppet people.
And the Muppet, yeah, we got to deal with the Muppet people, yeah.
The Henson organization.
Yes, the Henson Corporation.
Who say things like, this puppet can't do this.
They do. There are a lot of rules for the Muppets.
There are.
Yeah. How do you know about the rules?
I'm just speculating.
There are a ton of rules.
Like what?
They never refer to themselves as puppets. Uh-huh. They're not puppets. They're like people or creatures or whatever.
Right.
That was one of the rules. Yeah. They're never mean.
Right.
You know, there are a bunch of rules.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the weirdest rule?
The weirdest rule is that the Camilla, the chickens don't talk.
Right.
They just won't talk.
Right.
So that was like...
So you got to take that line out.
Yeah. Like we had a joke that like they say one word and they're like, no, the chickens don't talk. And we're like, come on.
And that is the name of your book.
Chickens Don't Talk.
Yeah.
And other stories from the trenches.
So everything's going good for you.
Yeah.
I'm happy for you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
I didn't mean to be dickish.
No, I liked it.
And your father and you have a wife.
Yes, a wife
Parents
and two kids.
Parents are still married.
Mm-hmm.
But this, so why are you in therapy?
Why? I was just getting very anxious. I don't know why.
Oh,
I was getting really anxious.
I have that too.
Yeah.
Well, how is it manifesting itself?
Not being able to sleep was a big one. And just generally being, just general anxiety about it.
It's a horrible feeling.
It's a horrible, yeah. Are you in therapy for that?
I'm in therapy for a lot of things.
Yeah.
But that's sort of a new thing. It's like, it's dread. Like
yeah.
Mind manifests itself and like I'll have a moment where I'm like, okay, everything's good, but oh fuck, I gotta do that thing.
Yeah.
And also like why am I incapable of relationships? But that's not your problem.
Why? Why are you? Not why is that not my problem?
I don't know, man. But the anxiety is
it just
part
became
of
it. My problem.
Yeah. live in it.
Okay.
So what are you anxious about?
I'm trying to think just like generally like am like what am I going to do when I wake up in the morning, I guess.
Right.
You know, like angst general. It's a lot of like,
but you're busy.
And this will sound stupid.
You're busy,
this
right?
will sound jackass, but
you
it's
make
all,
a career out of.
Yeah, make career. Exactly. I do stuff like that to try to like, you know, but it's a lot of like holly, like a lot of, yeah, that kind of anxiety.
Like just the day.
Yeah. The day, daily anxiety. Yeah.
Huh.
So yeah,
it is a little dread. Like it's, before you go
there's
to bed.
Dread.
Before you go to bed at night. Like,
yeah. Or I'll just wake up, you know, early, not sleep
too
that
early.
Well.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and just be like, why? And I don't know why I'm anxious because generally, you know, I feel
do you have a
relatively
of,
happy.
Do you but, have a, right.
You know, but it's like, but yeah.
Is that, are you finding any of it? It's just sort of existential. Like, you know, what's the point?
I think some of it might be that.
Yeah.
I think some of it's that.
Right, because you've had a tremendous amount of success. You're not even 40.
Yeah.
So like, then it's sort of like, well, what happens from 40 to 50?
Yeah. And I think I was really focused on like career stuff, like everyone,
sure.
You know? And then there's like, and then there's something like, well, this is it.
But see, isn't that the worst, you know, feeling? Like even now, like I'm doing better than I've ever done before.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm making a living and it's an honest living as far as I can tell.
Yes.
That, you know, at some point, you know, and I was never a careerist. I never really thought about making money, which was an issue that I always had, but I'm doing okay. But then like when all that shit is in place and you're doing, you know, $1 million business, you realize like, well, that didn't do it.
I know.
And you got two beautiful kids and you got a life and it's like, well, how come I'm, what now?
Yeah.
To have to rejigger to make that, obviously it's important and it's a great thing, but to still have that weird kind of like, well, what
next?
I did it all.
What next?
Do you know how to have fun?
Yeah.
Outside of baking?
Yeah, no, in the moment I'm having fun, but then I have this anxiety and it's this feeling of like, well, this is a moment where I've got my health, I've got this great family, everything's going well.
Right.
So I shouldn't have to rely on like whatever to be
right.
happy. I should just be happy with what I've got.
Right.
You know.
Oh, so
and
like,
part of that I think is like
gratitude.
Tricky. Yeah. It's gratitude. And also part of it's being like, I think, surrounded by the industry, by the Hollywood industry constantly
Monsters.
In Los Angeles. Is like it's a I love LA for a variety of reasons, but I think that is something that can be
Well, it's a very insulated and bizarre world.
Exactly.
And, you know, the difference between public persona and personal lives. Like, I know there's a lot of, like, just people doing their jobs out there, but there's also a lot of weirdness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In terms of priorities and quality of life problems.
And it's so public. Like, when you do a movie that doesn't do well, it's really public. Or when you right. do, I mean, in this case, I did a movie that did well, that's public. But
right.
But
also there's the secret knowledge of, you know, what people's real lives are like.
Yeah.
I mean, you're on the inside.
Yeah.
And there's that weird balance between public information and personality and failures and, and just the lives people are living.
Yeah.
That there's almost this weird oath of secrecy just by virtue of the fact that you're on the inside and doing well in show business, you have to be diplomatic about right
but how you feel
about how you feel
yeah.
and you know, and what about that guy's not doing well, should we be concerned? Right. Don't worry, there are people handling that. Right. But I have to do a thing. It's not your problem.
Right.
Okay
it's totally also like the, like, you know, I've never had a career high like Neighbors.
Right.
The weekend after it opened, I got a horrible cold. Horrible.
Like, I get it.
One of those colds. And I was in a really bad mood. And I was like, what was wrong with me?
Right.
What's wrong with me? I have a cold?
Yeah.
Right. It's going to bum me out?
Yeah.
And I was
yeah.
I'm glad I'm in therapy. That this cold is bumming me out. I think it's similar, like my brother's in D.C. and that's also a company town. And it's like everything's about politics. And it's not reality.
It's a similar social dynamic.
Yeah.
Like there are things you can say and can't say. And, you know,
exactly.
there are things sort of like, well, somebody, you know, get him some coffee and we'll try to make this right.
Yeah.
You know,
right. it's exactly the same because it's also a star culture there. Yeah. The stars are politicians.
Right.
But it's a very similar, like, very similar thing. All his stories are exactly the same as mine. And all the insecurities are the same.
Well, there's that old saying that politics is show business for ugly people, right?
Right.
Something like that.
Except I'm in comedy, so it's the same. Politics and comedy are... There's not a lot of attractive people in comedy.
No, there are.
There are a few.
They're a few. Charming.
They're charming.
And cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually. Well, it was great talking to you.
Yes.
Did we cover it all?
I think so.
You think your dad's going to be okay with this?
I think he's going to be fine. He's going
to
love it.
One more chance to throw him under the bus.
No. Great guy.
All right. Thanks, man.
Cool. Thanks.
Okay, that's it. He's a good guy. Artisanal bread. Harvard's fine. He was a nice guy. I'm glad he stopped by. Go to WTFpod.com for all your WTF Pod needs. Check out the schedule. Check out where I'm going to be. Got a few things coming up. Oh, my God. I got to start making television again. Writing television. Got to finish a new hour. Tighten that thing up. Then tighten it up, man. I don't know where Def Black Cat is. I'm not going to freak out, though. I think someone else is just feeding him. I drink that smoothie too fast. Boomer lives!
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.